At this hour, the mystery deepens in the search for missing Riley Strain. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here at Crime Stories and on SiriusXM 111. How can you turn a deaf ear to this? Listen.
I haven't talked to my boy for over a week. And it's hard.
What do you say to somebody that gives up a part of their life to help you find your life? It's amazing.
Thank you for getting the word out and keeping the word out. And please keep, don't stop sharing. Don't stop sharing till we bring Riley home. Please just continue.
I've got such a bad feeling. Where is Riley? This kid scrubbed in sunshine. This is the boy every mom wants their boy to be like. Okay? The apple of his family's eye. You were hearing his mother begging and pleading, crying, trying to speak through tears, asking us to help. Tip line 615-862-8600. Repeat, 615-862-8600. Now is the time for us to act in the search for Riley Strain. And I've got to tell you, 100, 1,000 times, mothers would come to me at trial and even now begging for help. But at trial, you have to keep a clear head, unclouded with emotion, and look at the facts in order to help the family. I want you to hear the original 911 call. Listen.
Who is it that you're wanting to report is missing?
It's we're here on a fraternity formal trip. It's one of my good buddies.
Okay. What is his name?
His name is Riley Strain. Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, Strain, S-T-R-A-I-N.
Okay. Is he white, black, Hispanic, Asian?
He's white. He's white, 22-year-old, 6'5", blonde.
Okay. And what was he last seen wearing?
Outside of Luke Bryan's bar last night at like 10. And then the last time his location on his phone was by the sheriff's office at like 11 p.m.
Okay, and what color clothing was he last seen wearing?
He's wearing jeans, boots, and a half black shirt, half brown, light brown.
You're hearing a good friend of Riley Strain's calling 911, and how ironic is that one of his last pings, the location on the phone, was at the sheriff's office, in front of, near, around the sheriff's office. No network or phone service since 9:53 p.m. Where is Riley? Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. I'm going to play you more of the 911 call because I have learned with working with so many, many juries as a felony prosecutor, that takes you to the moment and you can learn so much about probative facts that prove something, that help you find the person. But first, I want to go to a special guest joining us, Chris Dingman, a very dear family friend of the Strains, and you can find them on a GoFundMe at Riley Strain. Chris, thank you for being with us. What is the frame of mind of the family right now in the search for their son?
The family is completely devastated. You know, we're 10, 11 days into this. Really, Riley just disappeared in thin air. And we try to keep faith. We keep hope. The ironic part of not having clues means we have hope he's still there, lost. Somebody may know where he is. But it is truly devastating on the family.
And shortly, speaking of clues, we are going to be joined by the woman who may have found the single most important clue as of right now. Back to you, Chris Dingman, a very dear friend and spokesman for Riley's family. How did this whole thing unfold? When did Riley's parents discover he's missing? I mean, it's every parent's worst nightmare. You know, Chris, I work every day, sometimes holding down two, sometimes three jobs, because I want to make a college fund for my children to get through high school, you know, give them tutors if they need it, get them to college, give them every opportunity that a lot of people, including myself, never had to make it easier for them. So Riley gets to college. He's doing great. He makes friends in his fraternity. I think it was Delta Chi. Everything's going fine. He goes on their formal, which all the college kids do. And all of a sudden, mom gets a call. He's gone. I mean, how does that happen? You put all your love, all your energy, all your money, everything into helping your children. You think going to college is the thing to do, and bam, he's gone. What happened?
Yeah, the family was actually notified at about 10:30 Saturday morning by his fraternity brothers, wanting to know if they had heard from Riley, because as we all know now, he did not come back to his hotel room. The family instantly told the boys, please contact the police, go down to the police station. They started packing a few clothes together, constantly reaching out for Riley, hopped in a car and started heading that way. This process of reporting Riley missing started actually at 10:30 Saturday morning. And an official report that we have been shown didn't take place till 1:40, sometime in that area. That's how long it took for the boys to actually get somebody to file an official report with. A lot of confusion on why that took that. But yeah, the family was actually notified about 10:30 Saturday morning.
Okay, guys, you're hearing Chris Dingman joining us, a very dear friend of the Riley Strain family. Guys, I want to hear more of that 911 call. They were heading straight out to Dryden Quigley, WSMV 4, investigative reporter, for the very latest. But let's hear the 911 call. Listen.
And you said it last showed outside the sheriff's department? Like around that area by the river, by the sheriff's department over there. Okay. Does he have any life-sustaining medications or disabilities? No. You said he has a phone, so it's a cell phone, right?
Yeah, it's an iPhone 15 Pro Max.
What is the number?
But it's hold on. All right, you ready?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
You said the last four were 4198?
Yes.
Okay. And are you going to be waiting there at the door of the precinct, or are you going to be waiting in your car?
I mean, yeah, we're at the front door of the precinct.
Okay. I've got the call sent there at the Central Precinct, 601 Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown, right across from Music City Center. We'll get an officer out to you as soon as we can. Please call us back if something changes before they arrive.
So when you look back, on everything that happens in every case, you think woulda, coulda, shoulda. They should have done the report earlier. We shoulda this. We shoulda that. Bottom line, Riley Strain is missing. His parents asking us for their help. Again, tip line 615-862-8600. So, Chris Dingman, you're telling me that the mom and or dad get a message the following morning at 10-ish a.m. They ask the fraternity brother, quick, go, report him missing right now, and they head to the area. Is that correct?
Yes. They were in Springfield, Missouri, where, you know, Riley was born and raised, and that's where we are. And instantly, when a parent gets that message, you know, you're mortified. What's going on? You know, especially when you're 6 or 7 hours away from your kid, you know. And they hopped in a vehicle, threw some clothes together, was constantly trying to reach out to Riley on their journey there with, unfortunately, no response.
Oh, cool. You know what that's reminding me of, Chris Dingman? I'm in New York, where we live with the children. At that time, they're about, 8, 9 years old. Had just gotten them to bed and get a call. My dad is on life support. I get one sentence off to him. Daddy, I'm on the way. Within 15 minutes, we were out on the street in pajamas trying to hail a cab, all right? And the whole way trying to get back home to Macon, Georgia, just in fits, tied up in knots. I can only imagine what Riley's parents were going through as they drove all the way to where he goes missing. And speaking of, straight out to Dryden Quigley, investigative reporter WSMV4. Dryden, thank you for being with us. First of all, describe the area where we believe Riley went missing. And guys, I'm about to go to the woman who has found what could be the single most important physical clue yet. Go ahead, Dryden.
So the last place that he was spotted on the video camera is kind of up a street, and it's going along the Cumberland River where there's a pretty steep drop off down there. Different areas have steeper than other parts, but you can last see him crossing this street and kind of heading up towards under these two bridges where he's last seen.
You know, I'm very curious. Is it true, Dryden Quigley, WSMV4, that Riley was headed toward a homeless encampment?
So along that drop off between the Gay Street and Cumberland River, there's this bank, and it is where a lot of people spend the night and sleep along there, and then under the two bridges as well. Yes.
What people? What people? What? Boy Scout campers? Who is staying out there under bridges?
People, yeah, who don't have anywhere else to go. You know, there's a lot of trash down there too. And so that comes into play later when looking for Riley's possessions too.
Is it true that drugs are used in that area by the homeless people?
I can't say that for sure. I haven't seen it myself, but I would believe it's possible. Yeah.
So did he realize he's headed for an encampment of homeless people where drugs apparently are used openly, as we have seen now developing across the country?
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, we have been playing the 911 calls. We're telling you the very latest of what you know. But now I want you to hear from a volunteer searcher, Brandy Bainan, who lives in Nashville and possibly has found the single most important physical clue yet. I'm so grateful Brandy could speak to us. First of all, listen to what she tells us regarding what she was looking for when she found the clue.
We were looking for either his boots, shirt, he has a bright blue wallet, any of those indications. But we went down to the embankment and walked along the river until we got to underneath the bridge, which is one of the last known facilities that he was in. And we started just digging around, rummaging as much as we can. And about, I want to say we were there into that part for maybe 20 or 30 minutes. And there's about three ledges, and I'm the third bottom ledge, which it's very hard to explain, so I'm sorry if that is hard to imagine. Anna saw a card right there and flipped it over to look at the backside because it was just like the bank on the front, and saw his name, and she goes, "Oh my God, we found his card." And I was like, "No, we didn't." And right there, we were both instantly shocked. Our stomachs dropped, and then we were both like, "We have to keep going. Like, this means we have to keep going."
I can't imagine what went through everyone's minds when they realize they have found evidence. Liz, we actually have sound of that discovery. Everybody listen.
I don't think they do right here, or at least where that guy's tent is, because he's talking about how cold. What? You found his credit card?
We found his credit card. We got to hang up the phone.
Oh my God.
Guys, I'm just trying to take in that moment where they find the piece of evidence. And I want to make something very, very clear. Chris Dingman, this young boy, Riley Strain, has no history at all ever of drug use. Never has been thrown out of school, never has been in treatment, not even a disorderly conduct, crossing the street, jaywalking, nothing. Isn't that true, Chris Dingman?
100%. Yeah, Riley was a straightforward kid. You know, we've had a lot of people question us and go, "I can't believe he's that good of a kid." And all you have to do is ever be just a little bit of his life, just a blimp, meet him anywhere. And you instantly knew that the pictures that everybody's been sharing with him smiling, that truly was that kid. He was an awesome boy, and we want him back, and he is an awesome boy.
You know, you just brought me to tears because it reminds me so much of my son, John David. People are always saying, how can one kid be so good-natured and so joyful? I mean, you know what his nickname is here at the house? Awesome. His nickname is Awesome. And just thinking about him, completely innocent. I mean, Dr. Bethany Marshall joining me, high-profile psychoanalyst, joining us out of L.A., and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, when I talk about this homeless encampment and how drugs allegedly are being openly sold and used, this is not about Riley going down to get drugs. He has no history of that at all. Zero. He was out with his friends on the fraternity formal weekend. He wanders off alone, and this is where his bank card is found. It's like a lamb being led to the slaughter, Dr. Bethany.
Exactly. Nancy, it sounds to me like Riley was extremely disoriented. He thought he was going back to his hotel room. He no longer had his friends with him. And he was simply walking the wrong direction. And he walked right into the jaws of danger. I mean, what happens in these homeless encampments is that they are communities, Nancy. And everybody in the homeless encampment tends to know each other. They watch out after each other. They sometimes exchange food. They look after each other's kids. They're like little tiny cities.
What in the hay are you talking about, woman? I mean, Dr. Bethany, this is not a commune where they're raising organic food and singing Kumbaya every night. They're, God bless them for their misfortune, but there are drugs being openly sold, hard drugs, needle drugs. Bethany, I don't know what world you're coming from, but you send a kid straight out of high school down there, but it's the last thing I'm going to do is send John David and Lucy under a bridge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what I was going to say was that the fact that he was not a part of this group and he walked in made him extremely vulnerable. It was a very precarious situation, walking into a group of desperate people. And this is like a child, like a little lamb being led to the slaughter. He did not know what he was getting into.
Guys, I want to circle back to what we know. Again, a volunteer searcher who spends her own valuable private time helping in the search for Riley has found a very significant piece of physical evidence. It's Brandy Bain, a volunteer searcher. And I want you to hear what she has to say about why Brandy is searching for Riley.
I personally started going out Tuesday night. I went out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I was doing some TikTok lives with a friend while I was searching because I was kind of going on my own. And Anna happened to see one of those TikTok lives, and she messaged me and asked if she could come join the next day. And she did, and that gave me that gave me the ability to be able to go all the way down to the embankment because I couldn't just do it with myself in case something were to happen. No one would know. Or my friend on TikTok wouldn't really be able to help me. So Anna was brave enough to go down with that with me. And so we went searching and we happened to find something.
There is no way in H-E-double-L, no way in H-E-double-L that Riley's trying. Did you hear what she just said? That she didn't know if she was brave enough to go down the slope into that area. She was afraid, and that is in broad daylight. And here walks in Riley into this area late at night. What happened to him? Where is he? I need to get a clearer picture about exactly where the bank card was found. Let's listen to Brandy Bainan.
It was in the embankment. So there was like a brick wall because there is a, so we're underneath the bridge. So then there, if you're up on the sidewalk, there's a fence and there's a brick wall that comes down if you're under the embankment then. And then that brick wall kind of turns into some mud and rocks, trees, and then that goes into another ledge, similar ledge, which goes into another one, which then goes into rocks, which then turns into the river. So it was in that third little ledge of mud, dirt, and then you have to, and right now in Nashville, it is full of garbage there. So we were actually rummaging through trash, absolute trash, everything that you can imagine, including things that were dangerous to us. Like we saw some needles and things like that.
Yeah, Bethany, the peace loving people down under that bridge and their hypodermic needles, it'd be a cold day in hell before I would let my children go down there. And here's Riley Strain. I mean, he's basically straight out of high school. I'm just trying to get an understanding about what Brandi Bainan is saying, because from what she's describing, there is no way that that bank card of Riley Strain's could have fallen in that location. Let me understand.
No.
Listen what Brandi Bainan says about the card's location.
I personally do not think that that card could have landed there from just like stumbling and losing a card out of your hand, because it would have had to go down a few ledges. Now, it has been some time that's passed since the 8th, and then we did have rain on the exact week after that Friday. So I don't know what that would do at all, if that would affect it at all. But when we found the card, it wasn't actually covered up that much. There was some leaves, and she saw the blue in it.
Guys, we're trying to determine the significance of the location of Riley Strain's bank card, and I have a reason for doing this. I remember in one murder case, and the guy was a serial killer, but I could get him on one case. It was Jane Doe. And I found one of her earrings in a particular location. And the fact that it was there proved volumes to me. I learned that that was a tertiary crime scene, which led me then to the secondary and the primary crime scene because of that one earring. Now let's think what this bank card means.
I don't think they do right here, or at least where that guy's tent is, because he's talking about how cold.
What? You found his credit card? We come and found his credit card. We gotta hang up. We gotta hang up the phone.
Oh my God.
Riley Strain was not going on a leisurely stroll amongst these rocks down by the river. That did not happen. And back to Dryden Quigley joining us, investigative reporter WSMV for Nashville. I understand that one of the homeless gentlemen that was there claims that he heard a, quote, commotion around the time we believe Riley Strain may have been there. What can you tell me about that, Dryden?
So I didn't speak with that homeless person myself, but it has been reported that, yes, around that time, he heard a commotion after he saw Riley walk through there. That's all he said about it or was reported about it, but I didn't speak with him myself.
Also, emerging in the search for Riley Strain is surveillance video. But first, I want to ask Chris Dingman. Chris, very dear family friend of the Strain and speaking for them. Chris, what is the reaction from the parents regarding the discovery that Braden made of the bank card?
I'm extremely happy you're asking me that. I actually had friends of the family that was very close to the young ladies when they found it. I got a phone call Sunday afternoon. They were super excited. They go, "We found his card." And I said, "Can you go to them?" They were within about 100 yards of each other. And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Do me a favor." I said, "I know the bank that Riley uses. Unfortunately, and you've dealt with this a lot, there are a lot of people that will do fake cards, fake IDs, and throw them in crime scenes just to be cruel." And I wanted to make sure before this went,
or at least,
you know, went wild, that I notified the family. The young ladies instantly took a picture of the card, sent to me. I knew at that moment, that's Riley's card. I contacted the family, said, "Hey, this is the pinpoint. They've dropped me a pin." One of the young ladies, I asked her, I said, "Please dial 911. I'm going to get a hold of the family." The other person that contacted me, she was actually in a close proximity of some police that were actually there with canines and had been searching the area a little bit farther away. I told her, I said, please go get the police, take them directly to those young ladies. We need to secure that area. The young girls, as you've kind of heard in their voices, they were just ecstatic. They were nervous. They were scared. And I told her, I said, I need you to do something for me, please. I said, you're about to be bombarded with 100+ people. You guys were live on TikTok. Everybody kind of has a ballpark idea where you are. I need that crime scene secured. Please, if people come up there, tell them to stand back till the police get here so we can do a formal investigation in that exact area. One thing that struck out to me, I don't know if you have physically seen the picture of the card, and I'm glad the young lady brought that up and we've discussed this. That card is not dirty. It's not filthy. For a card that had been laying on the ground for 9 days, not in the water or even remotely close to the water, in essence, to the storms that they had, there's constant moisture down there. There's constant wind flow down there. And there was no visible signs of, you know, the Frisbee. The kids leave the Frisbee out in the yard. 2 days later, you go out. It's covered in dew and a little dirt particles. That seemed to me to be very, very strange. So I would love to see your take on that.
You know, I find that very interesting, the point that you're bringing out, that the card was not weathered at all. Joining me is Steve Fisher, missing persons, private investigator, search and rescue specialist, owner of Search Investigations. Find it at searchinvestigations.org. Steve Fisher, thank you for being with us. What does that tell you? I find it very probative.
I think one thing that's important to realize is that the river levels on the at 10 p.m. Night he went missing were 7 feet higher than when the women found the card. So the water level was significantly higher, which is why you see the different color, the darker rocks. So it's a controlled river. They had let a lot of, outflow out of it. So that could have been submerged and simply the water level coming down, and that would account for why the card is so clean.
Hold on. Steve Fisher, what about the fact, as we just heard from Braden, that it was wedged in? It didn't get there innocently.
From what I understand, I did watch the video of when they uncovered it. I think it was under some a little bit of debris. And, we'll never know for certain, but in search and rescue, we're looking for the last known position and it's the same spot that the cell phone last pinged at on Life 360. Originally told it was 50 to 100 feet south on the south side of that bridge, which is right where this card ended up also. So I think, there's a likelihood that it just could be the water flow is the reason that it was found on the embankment.
Ben Powers is joining us, high-profile lawyer out of Nashville, and you can find him at legalpowers.com. Ben Powers, thank you so much for being with us. What can you tell us about your knowledge of the case and your insight into what's happening right now?
Well, so right now it sounds like the investigation has locked in a really narrow timeline of how that evening went, from being removed from the bar to the various surveillance footage, to the ping from the cell phone, all the way to the debit card down at the riverbank. The debit card at the riverbank is curious because it's not with his wallet. There's no other possessions with him, and it was found amongst what we might call trash. But since it is a homeless encampment, that could be personal possessions of someone that lives down there. Maybe they were trying to discard the debit card, or maybe there's no foul play at all. It's a little too early to try to make a determination one way or the other as to that type of conclusion. But the investigation has been very thorough. They've used canines, they've used sonar, they've used helicopters, they've used drones, volunteers, as the volunteers that found the debit card. So it is a very thorough, extensive investigation. It's just that this narrow time frame is so curious because they have him on video going down Gay Street, but they don't have him on video at the courthouse, which is just at the other end of the Gay Street where the video last saw him. And they have an officer that was on scene investigating a claim of vehicle burglary. He didn't hear or see anything out of the ordinary. And they do have one of the benefits of that homeless encampment is, as has already been stated, there's at least one witness that heard some commotion, but that's a relatively large community down there. So I suspect that there's other witnesses that just haven't come forward yet with what may have happened that evening.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Luckily, in this case, we also have grainy surveillance video that is emerging.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Guys, this is the most recent video surveillance that we have obtained to Dryden Quigley, WSMV4.
So we're looking right now at Metro Police's body worn camera. He's out there responding to what I believe was a burglary call, and he runs into Riley. He greets him. He says hi. Now, Riley keeps walking down that street, and just a few feet away, you can actually see the bridge in the video. That's where Riley's phone last pinged. Now, the officer was there for another 45 minutes, and he says he didn't hear anything out of the ordinary. That bridge over there is the last spot that Riley's phone went off, but it took until yesterday to have this video come out.
Riley, he's coherent. Everything's fine. He's speaking to the officer. The officer looks like he's doing a safety check in a parking lot, just poking around late at night. He's walking normally. He's not drunk. He's not on drugs. He's wearing the clothes that was described, that were described by his friends. Is he walking toward or away from the bridge, Dryden Quigley?
He is walking towards it. He kind of turns around, so it's hard to see, but yes, Riley's on his way towards that first bridge.
Okay. What would be on the other side of the bridge, Dryden?
So there are two bridges, actually, but between them and down the side, there are usually people either sleeping under the bridge or down the side, again, of the embankment, very close to where his credit card was found.
So you're telling me that the homeless encampment was down the side of that bridge toward which he is headed?
Yes.
Have there ever been ambushes there of people crossing the bridge or approaching the bridge at night that we know of?
No, not that I know of, no.
To Chris Dingman, what, if anything, do we know? Where was he headed?
And I can help you out with a lot of your questions.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the way the videos were released to us that day is kind of the way that you have laid them out just then. What we do know is the one video where Riley is running through the parking lot and falls down, that is the first video of those three.
Right.
There was an altercation in that intersection. There was an altercation with two gentlemen in that intersection. We think Riley was walking up to it, saw the altercation, and decided to go around the back of the food truck. And that's why he was at a little bit of a faster gallop, per se. The family, we have personally been to that food truck and look at their footage. That's how we know. You know, initially people were thinking Riley was attacked in that intersection. He was not. We think the reason Riley started to run a little bit, is one of the people in the altercation started running. We think one of the people that was in the altercation took off running behind the food truck towards the fire truck. And that's why Riley just microseconds, wow, I need to move. That's why he started running behind the truck. The second video is where he's walking along the wall. It's kind of a dark area. You'll notice he keeps reaching up towards the back of his body. The first video, unfortunately, when Riley goes down, there's a concrete pole for that parking lot, and Riley went into it aggressively. He went shoulders and then hit his head into that as he was going down. In that video, he's there for, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds before he gets himself and his bearings back up. The video too, that, you know, that's why we think it. At first we thought maybe he was trying to take his phone to his ear, but after putting the pieces together in order, Riley, you know, was probably rubbing his neck and shoulders from hitting the concrete barricade. The next video where he is crossing the street where the construction barricade is, he walks right along the construction barricade. Whatever happened with, you know, him hitting his shoulders and neck as he's coming through here, I think he kind of comes out of the ethers, we say, you know, when you have an abrupt movement against your body, because his body motions go back towards more normal. The fourth video and the last video that we have of anything seeing Riley will be the police video. So I just wanted to help you guys with that and put it in progression so people would understand the timeline. The wild part, and the young lady from Nashville with the media, I think this is all within about a 5-minute window and very close proximity of each other, of these videos as they go by.
From what I know right now, Steve Fisher, joining us from searchinvestigations.org, there has been no additional cell phone activity or bank card, credit card activity since Riley went missing. What does that tell you?
Well, I mean, that would tell me that everything stopped right there. And you know, as we're looking at surveillance, is what literally every case comes down to. And one thing I think is important in this, and, you know, I'd like Chris to know, is, you know, right across the river is pretty thoroughly covered. You got the Tennessee Titans stadium, and then you got a Marathon Oil facility. And I've been dealing with the Titans. They did not capture anything. However, the Marathon facility, you know, has, I talked to the head of security there on Sunday. They have not been contacted by law enforcement. Their barges are literally right across from where that debit card was found, and they have a lot of surveillance because they got to protect that facility against people coming in from the water. So I was in touch with her. They were going to pull all the footage on Monday morning. I let the detective know. He didn't get back to me, but then communication stopped. So I think there was a halt put to that. But I would just, you know, want Chris to know that I think there is significant surveillance available right across the river.
So we need that barge video pronto.
Yes. I was supposed to have it. I was supposed to get that Monday.
Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, psychoanalyst out of LA at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, so often citizen investigations tips are discounted, but if it weren't for citizen sleuths, we would never have found Gabby Petito. That would never have happened. She was out in the middle of nowhere, literally dispersed camping. In this case, a private citizen finds the bank card, and I believe there are more people that can tell us where is Riley. I believe that. So why is that not happening?
You know, Nancy, I was just thinking about Gabby Petito. It was people who were influencers, who were crowdsourcing information. In some ways, Nancy, they were more motivated to solve the crime than the police were. The police see so much, they can become jaded, overwhelmed. Maybe they're understaffed. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But in terms of crowdsourcing information, people care about Riley Strain. They see this blonde, good-looking young man, educated, from a family who loves him, and they want to know what happened. So I'm wondering, are the police plumbing this very rich source? Are they asking other people what happened? Because this is where a lot of clues could be found.
Again, the tip line is 615-862-8600. If you know or think you know anything about the disappearance of this young man, literally scrubbed in sunshine, please call 615-862-8600. All of our efforts, thoughts, and prayers with Riley Strain and his family now. Goodbye, friend.